Accession number 29049, Mr. Frank Tolley, Reel 5. Now, what were you doing at the sort of number 3 Observer Advanced Flying Unit? You weren't there long, just June.
Yeah.
Seems to have been about a 5 or 6 week course.
Yes.
And what were you doing there?
Elementary navigation and bombing. Bombing practice. Yes. And, well, that was it. It was.
So, what was the point of that? How did that differ from all the other navigation and bombing practice you'd done?
I don't really know. I don't know why we were sent there. There's quite a number I was sent there from Harrogate.
So, as far as you were concerned, it didn't really add much to your training.
Not really. No. No.
Now, the next thing you perhaps will remember better, you went
to Morton in the Marsh.
That's to number 21 operational training.
Yes.
Now, what were you doing there?
Flying Wellingtons. We were on Wellingtons, and it was operational training, well and truly, doing cross countries.
Now, hang on a minute. What was the nature of the unit?
We were crewed up.
Now tell me how you were put into a crew. How did they actually sort out?
Well, I arrived at about the same time as the skipper, an Australian. He was a flight sergeant at that time.
What was his name? Is this Windham?
Yes, Windham, Bruce Collard Windham.
Now what was he like?
Oh, a great fellow. He was ostensibly going to be a fighter pilot, but they were kidded over in the Australian Air Force, over in Australia, that some of them should reconsider and come to Britain, join fly heavies, and because there's a chance of commercial flying after it. Well, like a lot of us, so anxious to get going, to get mobile, he came across and he went on to wireless training, a pilot on a wireless training camp somewhere down south.
What made you want to go with him? I mean, why did you pick Windham?
We were thrown into the same Nissen hut, we got talking. There was just the two of us in at that time, and he said, would you like to join my crew? And it was as simple as that. I just said yes. I mean, that was it. Since you get along all right. It wasn't until the next day that the rest of the crew was formed.
Now, hang on. What was Windrim like as a bloke? It's a long time ago.
Younger than me. I've been in touch with him all the time. Sadly, he died a couple of months ago. It was just an ordinary. But he liked to go around as I liked to go around and have a beer and chat and whatnot with the girls and it was really next day he had to go and get the rest of his crew sorted.
So you were the bomb aimer, so who was the navigator?
The navigator, I don't remember his name, the first one, but he had to go back a bit because he wasn't keeping up. And we took on Bill Porter, who had been in the same position as this other fellow, this other navigator, and he made it up. And so he... After a few flights. He joined us, you see.
And was he a sergeant as well, or a flight sergeant?
He was a sergeant. A sergeant then, yes.
And what was Bill Porter like?
Quite okay. Very, very chatty. Very keen to go. He'd been bombed out in London, one of the suburbs, and he was all raring to go. He was quite a jolly fellow. I saw him only 2 or 3 weeks ago. He came up here. How can I say with?
And what about the wireless operator?
I remember when, and he's written it in some paper I've got here. He said he remembers on one of the ops we did, he was called out, come have a look at this. See all this that's around. And he put his head through the Astrodome, and he said, oh, that's enough. And he stayed at the table ever after. He didn't want to know about that. You know, quite right. And the radio operator.
Who was he? Remember his name?
Yes, Ted Steen. Steen. Ted Steen.
Another sergeant. I presume it was a sergeant.
Yes.
What was he like? Ted Steen.
Bruce Windham got his WO. That came through whilst we were on.
So what was Ted Steen like?
Didn't know much about him. He came from Bedford, and his father was a civilian prisoner of war by the Japanese. He was out there in the Far East, and I don't know. Lost touch with him completely because. I only kept in touch with the skipper and the navigator, and later with the rear gunner.
Now, who was your rear gunner and his crew?
Rear gunner was an 18-year-old, as was the mid upper gunner. He was Jim Slater.
And what was Jim Slater like? He was a sergeant, wasn't he?
Yes, he was a sergeant.
What was he like, Jim Slater? Oh,
all right, a great big chap. He was a heavyweight. Later, I believe, when war was finished, he went on to a fairground, and he was one of the boxers, you know, on the fairground. Quite a happy-go-lucky fellow. His line shoot was, his grandfather kept a pub in Nottingham. And he lived with his grandpa, and from the age of 16, the barmaid used to get into his bed with him. It was all that. And whenever we went out, he got to have a woman. he got to find one. Now he's well married, and poor fellow, he's got not Alzheimer's. Parkinson's.
Now, who was the mid upper gunner?
He was a sergeant. He came from Ipswich, and. Small world.
What was his name?
Don't know. Call him Lucky Simmons.
Lucky.
L-U-C-K-Y. Lucky. I cannot remember his name.
And what was Lucky Simmons like?
I don't know. We didn't get on too well together. You know, he was part of the crew and. We didn't socialise much, and yet I saw him for the first time when I was in Marlesham Heath. I went to the dogs one Saturday afternoon, nothing else to do, and somebody said, let's go along to the dogs in Ipswich. We went along, and he was one that was leading the dogs out. He worked with Woolworths, but he was doing that. That's just by the way, of course.
Now how did the crew bond together? You didn't like Lucky Simmons so much.
No,
did
you bond together? It wasn't a matter of not liking him. We didn't mix with him much, you know.
Now, let's move it on. What did you think of the Wellington then? That you were.
Great.
What was great about it? What was it like?
How can I say? It was.
What was good about it? Describe it. Is it? I haven't seen it.
No, well, it's a twin engine bomber, of course. It had one turret, the rear, and with the gunners used to take it in turns in that. I would sit alongside the pilot when I wasn't down in the nose, and I would take over from him. Not very well, but you know, he was getting me to do this because ostensibly, if there's a crash, or if there's difficulty and we all got to bail out, I would have to take over if he went for Burton, you see. Fortunately, when we went to conversion unit, that was at Santoft.
You got a second pilot?
Yeah, yes. We were one of the lucky ones. It was...
What was the Wellington like?
Wellington.
You liked it. What did you like about it?
Well, we knew of his reputation. It was the skipper handled it very well. Takeoff and landing seemed to be no trouble for him, but he had quite a bit of flying experience anyhow. Before getting onto OTU, it wasn't a matter of coming from advanced flying unit onto OTU. He was well seasoned, I'd only handled Tiger Moths before, and this seemed to be all right. There's too many dials for me to concentrate on all of them, but you know, he would tell me this because we were flying twin control aircraft there. And
now, what sort of flight? You seem to have been doing a lot of cross country and circuits and landings, then cross country and bombing practice.
Yes.
Do you remember anything about that sort of training, those training flights, or are they sort of routine?
They were fairly routine. There was on one occasion when. I think this might have been a bit of a trick, I don't know, but we were told to return to base from Aberystwyth. Now, this came across in Morse, and the Morse had to be translated to, and poor old Ted Steen, he thought he'd balls it up. You know, he couldn't get Aberystwyth, you know, I've made a mistake here. So all he said to the skipper was, return to base. And all of us that was on the cross country, all the air crew, all the planes, excepting one, did the same thing. So only one, maybe it was a Welsh radio and operator, and he got his crew to go as far as Aberystwyth and then to turn back. It's just one of those things.
You seem to have done some night flights as well.
Oh, yes.
And also some fighter affiliation. Now, can you explain what that is?
Yes. Fighter affiliation was where you would be attacked. This was more or less for the gunners. Not myself, because there was no gun in the front at that time. The fighter would come from one direction, and the gunner would say, "Course to starboard now," you know, and so the skipper would go to starboard and start twisting the aircraft like a corkscrew.
How did that feel when he did a cork? Can you explain what a corkscrew was? Because you wouldn't have done that before.
No, bit of aerobatic movement, which. Bruce Windham, he was all for it, you know, having done a lot of that in fighter aircraft.
What was it like in the aircraft when he did a corkscrew?
Oh, a bit
were
of,
you thrown about?
Yes. You were. You had your harness on, that safety harness on. Yes. You didn't bother too much. You were young, you know. I'd be scared, but I'm just stiff now.
Now, what about one other thing I know? So you did quite a bit of dinghy and parachute drills. Can you just say, I don't know which one you want to do first, dinghy or parachute.
Yeah.
What were they?
Well, parachute was not so very much. It was a matter of jumping in a hangar down, jumping down from a hangar into where you've got a rain on you or something, jumping out of a basket, and that was
so not a full parachute, just
no,
inside.
That's right, yes, inside, yes.
Practicing landing.
Practicing landing. That's it, yes. And
did you worry about that? Were you bothered by heights?
Oh no, not at all. No, all that I was bothered about was, I hope I never have to do this over there. You know, and didn't have to, thankfully.
And what about dinghy training? What was dinghy training?
Oh, that was fun. Again, the odd bod. I had to be first one out to, and the dinghy would be upside down. You see. As it came out, and I'd be out to
who
turn.
Who released the dinghy? How was it
the
released?
Skipper. From the winter, I think the skipper released it. I cannot remember. I can't remember that. But we did this in full flying kit. Well, flying kit. We didn't have our uniforms on, but I had to go off the top board. In the baths at Rugby, and in the deep end, where the dinghy was, and I had to swim out to it, and then took it over, did that two or three times, and that was it. So,
but no problem really.
No problem there at all. Again. Hoping that this doesn't happen to us.
Now, so that was that. Anything else while you're at Moreton and Marsh? You seem to have been there a fair while, from August through to October.
Course, yes. Well, I mean, there was quite a bit of training to be done, and the weather, of course, was mixed as it. Always is, and sometimes you'll be stooging around, not getting off the deck, and so you would be doing
you'd be doing
navigation exercises on the ground in where there's a the time was going fast for you. You know, you were working to a clock, say a two-hour trip, working to the clock, and you were plotting. You're plotting a route and that. It's all.
Now the other thing is you had to learn how to fuse bombs. Do you remember that at all?
Not very much. Yes, had there was delayed action fuses. And instant fuses. It was a matter of screwing them in and into the nose of the shells. And I can't remember much about it.
So your next thing is Santoff. Now, what this is in November. You seem to have gone there. There seems to be a bit of a gap. But now,
because we had leave. We had leave then.
Now this is 1667 HB heavy bomber conversion unit.
Yes, it's there when we picked up Joe Platt.
And this is at Sandtoft. Where is
Sandtoft? Sandtoft, near Hull.
So in Yorkshire.
In Yorkshire, yes.
And you arrived there in November. Now. The heavy bomber you were being introduced to, what was it? Was it Lancaster? What was it? doesn't say.
No.
Or was
no,
it just no, more on the Wellington?
No, we finished with the Wellington. We started converting. This is conversion unit, right? We started converting onto Halifax first, but about a couple of flights in that, and suddenly we would change over to Lancs, which, from the skipper and my point of view, was much better than.
Tell me a bit, just briefly, what was the Halifax like? Does it stick in your mind at all?
Only that I can only compare it with, you know, we're going to fly in Halifax, that was it. But I can only compare it with where I went into a Lang.
So all right, let's talk. What was good about the Lancaster?
Well, I had plenty of room in the nose. There's plenty of rooms there. And good vision, very good vision. There is a gun turret, twin guns there. There were four guns in the back.
A rear gun and mid-upper. And then did the bomb aimer have a gun as well?
Yes. Browning 303, the same as theirs, but twin, two guns.
So, had you any training in that?
Oh, yes, had training in that in Canada and
so you were familiar with it?
Oh, yes, you had to be, yeah.
So, that was your job, one of your jobs. Would you be in there all the time, or would you, no. Where would you stay?
I would be from takeoff, when we I would be standing behind the flight engineer. Behind his seat, and then when we were airborne, he would move for me to get into the nose,
into the forward gun turret.
Yes,
and then would you have a place for the bomb aiming as well?
No, I was saying not in. No, I seldom went into the gun turret. The bombing compartment.
The nose, yes. Where you'd be.
That's where I was, yes.
And what was that like?
That was plenty of room. I'd got on the left hand side, I'd got the gyroscope. In front of me, I'd got the bomb sight. To the right, I got the kind of pre-selector.
Now, was this the same bomb site as you'd trained with?
Yes, Mark 16.
The course setting bomb site.
Yeah. Oh, no, not the course setting. Oh, no, that was very elementary. We gone on to
the Mark 16.
Mark 16. Know,
yeah. And what was it called? Just bomb site?
It was... a computer that wasn't a word we used then.
Don't worry about it. Tell me how it worked then. How did it work?
Well, how it worked. When we're coming over to the target,
Tell me how it works in theory, because we're going to do a typical raid later on. Right. How does it work in theory? Well, what did you have to do to use it?
I had to set wind speed, wind direction, airspeed, height. All this was fed through to me, you see.
Who by?
By the navigator and by the skipper. The skipper gave me the height and the compass setting. Navigator would give me wind speed, direction, and the airspeed.
And you'd feed these in?
I would feed these in, right. Having done that, on the other side, I would check on the kernel preselector. There is little switches, or in a box. It was called the kernel preselector. And what you did, these enabled you. You put the switches down, and it meant that when I released the bombs, they would go without the safety pins on. So if the safety pins were left on, they wouldn't explode. And to the right of that, there was the window chute. And through the window chute, on some raids, I had to drop silver paper.
Remember, this is how you use the sight. So you've set the target.
You've used the
release selector. What do you look through, or what do you do?
There's a little glass strip with a line coming down and one across it, you see. And then as you approach the target, you got flak and searchlights and whatnot.
This is in theory, remember?
Yes.
It's just how you use it.
Yes. Okay. So you're giving the skipper to keep on track, on course, on this.
On the straight line.
On the straight, yes. You're asking him to left, right, as maybe, left.
So you doubled left, but you only said right.
Right, yes, left. And then steady. Keep it steady now. Steady. Perspex rest. Bomb gone.
Right, we'll probably come back to this when we do a typical raid. That's how you... When did you let the bomb? When you came to the cross one?
Yes. When the target was on the cross. That was it.